Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Something is brewing in Starbucks. It starts with a small sound. A tap on the table. A beat on a cup. You try it again. You keep it alive. Before long, you've got a groove going. They say it's about the right time. Sometimes it just needs the right place. A bit of conversation and your favorite drink. We'll make the coffee. You make it happen. Rhythms made in Starbucks.
We're surrounded by alien foes. The fate of the galaxy depends on us.
We fancy a Mackey's? There are daily offers waiting in the McDonald's app.
But the universe...
The main mission can wait. Unlock daily offers in the McDonald's app now. 18 plus app only. Different offers available each weekday and on weekends until the 27th of September. Check app for details. Subject to availability. Fees apply to delivery. One use per day.
On this episode of Risk, you'll hear Brad Lawrence.
How could this plan go wrong?
And you'll hear Christopher Moncayo Torres.
Meet cute. Boyfriend, healthy relationship, proposed, engagement, didn't work out.
And me, Kevin Allison, on the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. Folks, this is Randy Sharp behind me now, and we're calling this week's episode, Is It Her? Two men sharing stories here that brought to mind for me that being single is hard, being in a relationship is hard, and going from being in a relationship to being single is hard. But for now, these gents will dig deeper. This is Brad Lawrence, a member of our team here for many years, at a Risk Live show in New York last year, the story we call 20%.
Recently just kind of passed a certain milestone. Last year became the year when New York became the place I have lived in longer than any other place in my life. That's right. 22 years in New York City. The first year that I was in New York City, you would not have guessed that I would have lasted 22 years. The first year was not great. There was a real sort of failure to thrive that first year. I had moved here to be an actor. With a girlfriend. A girlfriend was going to Columbia Law School. One of us was obviously much more sort of prepared than the other one. And we got up here and moved into Columbia Housing. Before we even moved, we were packing up our apartment. We lived together in D.C. And we're in the bedroom and we're packing things up. And she stops packing this box. And she looks at me across the bed. And she has this wide-eyed, very vulnerable expression on her face. And she says, I read this article that said that 80% of relationships don't survive the first year of law school. And I looked at her and I was like, sweetheart, that is not going to be us. We are made of stronger stuff. We have a good relationship. And we're going to be one of the 20% that survives. We're going to do it. We're going to be fine. And I said this to her because I thought that she was looking for reassurance. What she was actually doing was citing precedent. She's a very good lawyer, very successful. She's doing great. And also, all that literature was correct because we got to Columbia Law School and like within like 2 weeks, all right, if you are dating someone and they're like, I'm going to go to law school, just pack. Don't wait. Just pack your bags, be out the door, wave to them as you go, because within 2 weeks, it, shit had turned cold. It was just not going well. She was spending all time at the law library, and then she came in from the law library and talk about how she just worked so hard, and they all just work so hard, and lawyers like to talk about how they just work so hard, just work so hard, and I'm working two jobs. It's fine, fine. We just work so hard. But like then, even that conversation kind of came to an end, and when we weren't actually actively arguing, she just kind of come in and like, sort of see me and be surprised that I was still there. And it was not good. It was very icy, and I was lonely and miserable because I only had one other friend in New York City, and he lived in Prospect Heights, which is an hour from Columbia's campus, right? But at a certain point, I began to sort of feel like the problem we had in the relationship was that I was there. You know, that like my presence was kind of the biggest obstacle to a happy relationship with this woman. And so I came up with a sort of this plan that I thought would help the relationship, which was to not be there. My plan was that I would go, like, take the train down to Prospect Heights as much as possible and just drink with my friend Mike and just be out of the apartment and out of her hair and not annoying her, not distracting her. I just go down, drink with Mike, and complain to him about how sad and lonely I was that this relationship was falling apart. And Mike would just sort of sit there and listen. He let me do this. He was a very good friend. And I would just drink with him until, like, midnight. And then I would act the second part of my big plan to save the relationship, which is that I would then get on the train to go home, like an hour back up to Columbia's campus, because I thought, for some reason, I thought it was very important to the relationship that I be there, that I like sleep in the bed and be there when she wakes up in the morning. Let's recap my plan for saving this relationship. Part one, don't be present when she's awake and in the apartment. Do part B, stumble in the middle of the night drunk. How could this plan go wrong? And Mike would argue with me every time. He'd be like, dude, don't get back on the train. Like, this is ridiculous. Sleep in my couch. You're drunk. It's an hour. Don't get back on the train. But I was like, oh, no, I need to be there. You know, if the relationship's going to work, I should be there when she wakes up in the morning. I should, you know, this is important. And I would stumble off, like, to the train. But I'm also staying later and later at Mike's because I am so miserable and sad and lonely that I'm staying longer each time and getting drunker each time. So it goes from, like, going back at midnight on the train to going back at 1 in the morning on the train to 2 to 3. And I'm getting home later and later. And I am just sort of so sad and dejected because this relationship actually is very important to me. We've been together for 7 years. I really wanted it to work. I loved her very, very much. And I was really trying very hard, but I was in over my head. I was out over my skis, whatever metaphor you want to like get in there. I was all of them and I was just failing. And I was just sad. And I would ride the train back up there and think about how I was failing to make it in New York, to live up to like the optimistic hopes that I had when I moved to New York, that I was going to come here and be an actor and it was going to be great and that we were going to, you know, be the stellar couple. And that wasn't happening and the relationship was falling apart. And I was just sort of getting more and more sort of sad and feeling sort of so abandoned and alone. And I would just ride back on the train, staring at that black and speckled formica floor of the subway, thinking about this. And I'm doing this like 3 o'clock in the morning one night, and I'm so out of it. But then I look up and I see about 2/3 of a train down, I see this girl. And she looks like a woman who used to come into the coffee shop that I worked at in St. Louis. And she wasn't necessarily a friend. She was like friend of friends. Like we had the same friend circle, but she was on the opposite side of that circle. And in fact, when I knew her in St. Louis, I didn't actually like her much. I'd had a couple of conversations with her at parties and gatherings. And she was one of those people who like, she thought every conversation should become a debate, which is not really my vibe, and I was always kind of like avoiding her, but, you know, whatever. But now, here I am on the train, and I am so desperate in this moment to have, to look into someone's eyes and see someone who's a version of myself that is not this version of myself. Some past version of myself that had more hope and more promise reflected back at me from someone who knew me from a different point in my life. And I need that very, very badly in this moment, even from someone I didn't necessarily like that much, but also she's just too far away and I can't quite tell if it's her. And I'm staring at her, like trying to figure it out. It's 3 a.m. and I'm very tired and I'm very drunk. And I'm just staring at her and I'm trying to figure this out. But at the same time, like, I'm so drunk that all I've got is binary. It's just, is it her? Is it not her? Is it her? Is it not her? Is it her? Is it not her? It's just Pong. Right? And it's like that for several stops until we pull into Union Square and the doors open and suddenly she stands up and takes 3 big strides towards me, plants her feet, points at me and says, I know what you are doing. I will not be intimidated. You stop it right now. And then she gets off the train and the doors close behind her. And I think that was her. That was the only other person I knew in New York. And they did not, I hope she didn't know me. Or she was like, all of my suspicions were confirmed, you know. And it was just sort of like, oh. And I went home and all the preparatory material for law school was correct. The relationship did not make it to the end of that first year of law school. It all came crashing down. I moved out, moved in with Mike. Me and the lawyer are still friends, actually. Me and my train acquaintance, we've never seen each other again, and I think that's probably for the best. So, that's New York.
This is Yonatan Rickless behind me now, and we just heard from Brad Lawrence. Over at bradlawrencestoryteller.com, you'll see he does all kinds of writing and teaching and performing, including co-hosting and co-producing the legendary Hotsy Totsy Burlesque Show at the Slipper Room in New York, which is always a phenomenal time. Folks, there's still time to jump into my September online storytelling workshops. We've got one starting on September 2nd, another starting on September 13th. It's perfectly doable to jump in a week or two late. Also, here's another student of mine talking about what it's like.
I am about halfway through the workshop, and I never want it to end. Kevin is an absolute force of encouragement and warmth, and I experience the environment he creates as respectful, playful, and already for me, quite transformative.
And for more about my workshops, you can email me at kevin@risk-show.com. Next up, Christopher Moncayo Torres. Here he is now with a story we call Yellow Flags.
So I think there was more than one reason that my engagement didn't work out. It's okay to laugh. They're like the kind of reasons where like an outsider would not have the most faith or confidence in us. Like, for example, I was 21 when I proposed and she was 19 and I'm 38 now. We were like really into Halloween. And so like I proposed on Halloween. That's right. And that sounds cute. Like, it's okay proposing on Halloween. The thing is like costume choice. I was Joker and she was Harley Quinn. So like we weren't emulating the like greatest of dynamics in regards to healthy relationships. And also when I met her, she had a boyfriend. There's a lot of things that people are like, signs, red flags. I would call them yellow flags. And I would be take pause. And the other way to see it would be like, you know what? We were young. We were really passionate about each other. We were like nerdy about Halloween. And it worked out, even, you know, if she had a guy. But she chose me. And either way, when it ended, my grieving was really tough on me. It manifested in like really long walks. I took like all walks like throughout New York City, like particularly like in Bushwick and Brooklyn. like where we spent so much time together. And I was walking by all the familiar places, even by her house. And so if immediately you're thinking that's creepy and stalkerish, I'm not going to waste my 10 minutes here telling you otherwise. But I will say that I wasn't looking for her. I would have been mortified if I saw my ex. Like, we probably would have got into, like, some fight or something. We were that, like, we both want to hold a controller kind of couple, if that makes any sense to anybody. I just needed to see the house, the duplex, where we spent a lot of time there. And like, her parents are super protective, so, like, that's just where we hung out. And I remember walking by, and I just would look at the porch and think back to, like, that's where we spent, like, forever saying goodbye to each other, where we would just linger. And her mom would be like, yeah, Fermina, like, all righty, go home. But we just had so much love for each other. And I think that's also what I needed to see. Like, I missed that love or connection. So one of these times, I go by the duplex. I'm going by the train, about to jump on the L, and I see right by the entrance what looked like folded pieces of paper, and something told me to pick it up, and so I go for it, and I realize it's actually a wallet. It's one of these wallets are like in the shape of something, like sometimes you take a subway map and you make it into a wallet. It's got sleeves in it, and right away, like, I see that there's $400 in it, all 20s. And so, like, the Queens native that I am, I didn't skip a beat. I pocketed it and went straight for the train. Didn't make eye contact with anybody, because then they'd be like, that's my wallet. I'm like, no, not anymore. So when I'm in the train, the, like, 8 years of Catholic school, like, finds me and squeezes my guilt. And shout out to Our Lady of Lourdes. But you went there too. So I was thinking, like, if I lost $400, I'd want it back. And so I was, like, going to do my due diligence. And so I look in the sleeves. I find an ID, California ID, and it's San Francisco. And I'm like, I'm not going to send $400 to this random address in San Francisco that she might or might not live at anymore. But I read the name. It was Cynthia Haskins, red hair, blue eyes, 5'5", faded photo. Okay, I looked and I see a bank card. I'm like, okay, maybe I'll drop it off at the bank. I learned that banks don't want to be accountable for any lost items. So I was like, okay, all right, fine. And I'm like, police station. Never mind. And so, like, that's nothing against cops. It's just like, how did she know to find it? I don't know why you're all laughing, but that's just my point. So then I'm thinking, okay, great. This will, like, soothe my grief. I earned these $400. This will make me feel better. Like, what could I do with $400? Maybe I could take a trip somewhere and I could be sad somewhere else. And then there was one more card in the wallet that, like, stood out to me, and it was practically like a blank card with a magnetic strip and a signature space. And it said, in the signature space, UWS/AG. And that's it. And then there was, like, a website and, like, some sort of like login info. So I figured I'd go to the website. Maybe this would lead to something. And I see that it's linked to, like, a corporation that owns, like, a bunch of restaurants. In New York City, there's, like, a bunch of Dos Caminos. There's, like, a lot of them. And so apparently, like, this is a corporate website. Like, it owns all these. And if you're, like, an employee, you log in. And I logged in, and I thought there was, like, an allowance. And I was like, oh, maybe this is, like, a server. I used to be a server. Sometimes some companies give you, like, here, you could spend it on whatever you want at the restaurant. So I'm like, okay, but there's so many Dos Caminos. And I'm like, I don't think I could find her. And then I had, like, kind of like a beautiful mind moment. Like, I'm looking at all the restaurants, and these two stood out to me. Maybe it was more like a Sesame Street moment. You know what I mean? Like, one of these doesn't belong with the other kind of thing. Whichever fits with y'all. And then I realized, like, oh, there's, like, two restaurants. They're called Atlantic Grill. And one's on the Upper East Side, and then one's on the Upper West Side. AG. Atlantic Grill, UWS, Upper West Side. Great, maybe that's where she's at. So the next day, I make a beeline to the restaurant, and it's right across the street from, like, Lincoln Center, so it's kind of like hoity-toity kind of restaurant, and, like, it's even kind of hidden, like, it didn't want people in there, so I was like, okay. So, like, when I go in, I'm like, okay, how am I going to find... And I see a hostess, and she's like, hi, do you have a reservation? Can I help you? And I'm like, no. She's like flipping pages. She's like, well, if you don't have a reservation, I'm going to... And there's, like, a couple behind me, and they're, like, well-dressed. And I was, like, in this. I'm, like, in a T-shirt and jeans and some sneakers. And then I take out the wallet, and she right away is just like, oh, my God, you have Cynthia's wallet. And, like, she's like, excuse me, folks, to the people behind me. And she's like, you follow me. And we cut through the restaurant, and everyone's, like, in dresses and suits, and the ceiling's like a church. Like, it's super high and steeple-like, and the food smells amazing, and I'm never going to eat there. And I'm like, people are kind of eyeing me, and I'm like, maybe they think I'm, like, dropping off the food or delivering it. I don't know. So, like, I make my way, and it's the New Yorker in me. I'm just suspicious all the time. And so I go to the back, and she leads me. She's like, so go to that bartender. Just show him the wallet. And I'm like, wow, there's like two bars. It's like a massive restaurant. And so I go up to the bartender and he looks super busy and he's just making drinks and I'm trying to get his attention. And I was like, crap. And so like I take out the wallet and I kind of shake my hand and he's just like, oh my God, you have Cynthia's wallet. And then he's just like starts screaming. He's like, yo, this dude's got Cynthia's wallet. Like, yo, you have no idea, man. She's been like crying about that wallet. And I was like, before I could say anything, other people are surrounding me. They're like, oh my God, like, how'd you find her? How'd you find the wallet? And then I feel a tap on my shoulder and I turn around and I see 5'5", red hair, blue eye, beautiful girl. And I didn't know what to say. I kind of like was like super nervous suddenly. And I take out, you know, like I'm kind of handing her the wallet. And she's like, oh my God, like you found my wallet. Like, how did you find my wallet? And for some reason, the first thing I thought was like, you carry way too many 20s in your wallet. You shouldn't do that. That's not safe. I don't know if you're new to the city, but you shouldn't carry so much money. I thought you were a stripper at first, because like, maybe that makes sense. And like, or like, you know, maybe you'd run money. I don't know, whatever. I'm not going to judge you. When I get nervous, I talk a lot. So before I can keep going, she just hugs me. And she's squeezing me. And it's been a while since I've gotten some feminine affection. So I just hug her back. And we're just kind of holding each other. And again, I don't know how this is going to sound to y'all, but like, her hair was like near my nose. And like, I don't want to say there was a smell, but like, it just smelled like something new. That's it. And I just remember thinking, that was like, that's a new thing. And then she pulls away. She's got tears in her eyes. And she's just like, oh my God, like, you have no idea. This is my rent money. Like, this. And she takes out like a menu and she hands it to me. It's like a Bible of a menu, super thick. And she's just like, order whatever you want. Jake, it's on me. She's talking to the bartender. Order a drink, food. I have to check on my tables, but I will be right back. Just don't go anywhere. And so I sit at the bar and I take out my menu and I'm like, this is the meat cute. This is the story we're going to tell our kids. This is like, you know, hey, we met this way. And the kids are going to be like, oh my God, you know, they're going to emulate this beautiful connection. And I see my mind going. My mind is like already like, yeah, this is the way people meet. This is like amazing. Also like McAllen, 18, meat. Three fingers. And I'm flipping. I'm like, I order a fish seafood dish that I can't even pronounce. And I was like, I'll have that one. And so I'm there. And like, I take out like my journal and I'm just sort of like scribbling around like crazy day I'm having. And then suddenly I feel a tap on my left shoulder. And I turn and someone says to me, what's a cutie like you sitting all by yourself? And I meet who I come to later find out is Martha. Martha's got like silver streaks in her hair, a little bit of tar on the top of her teeth, significantly older from what I could tell. And I'm like, it's a long story. I've got time. So I was like, great. I recounted what happened, and she right away is like, oh my God, you guys are going to get married. But if you want to be with a real woman. And she puts her hand on my leg and like squeezes it. And I was like, Martha. This goes on for a while. And again, like, I could have just got up and left, right? Like, I'm sure you're all thinking that right now. Like, get up and leave. Don't put yourself in that position. But I wanted to see what was going to happen with Cynthia. And so, like, I put myself through. And also, like, this food came and this delicious drink. And I was just like, I'll juggle this. I'll see where this goes. I think I can manage both. Cynthia would come in from time to time. And she's like, hey, I learned that she's a writer. She did her MFA somewhere in California that I can't remember right now. And she was, like, into creative stuff. She's in a band. And I was just like, oh, we're meant to be. And so at the same time, Martha's like, you know, my husband's Bruce Springsteen's agent. I see you have a little book. Maybe you want to be a writer. And I was like, isn't that like a music guy? It's the same. It's the same. He can help you if you need help with your career. And I was like, no. And so she keeps going until finally she grabs me between my legs. I didn't make that sound. I made it. Because that's like a hushed, I did like a yip, loud, for everyone to hear, for Jake to hear. And Jake walks over, he's just like, is there a problem? And I kind of like quickly was like, I don't belong here. Like, I'm the first person to get kicked out. And so I was like, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know if to rat out Martha here. And then right away, Martha's like, Jakey, if you wanted to come over, if I invited you, wouldn't you come over? And he's like, Martha, no. I told you, stop harassing the youth. We've told you this time and time again.
And Martha goes on this tirade. Well, that's just the way it goes. Look around the bar. See, everyone does it. He and him. See, they're together. And I started noticing that there were some older people with some younger folks. And I was like, what community am I in right now? And I don't want to make assumptions, but I knew I wanted to get out of it. And so right away, Jake's just like, Martha, they go in, they go at it. They go back and forth. And she's like, stop harassing him. She's like, don't tell me what to do. And then she takes out like an e-cigarette. And she pulls it and she blows smoke right in his face. And Jake didn't like that. And so right away, he's just like, I need you to go, Martha. That's it. We've told you time and time again, you got to go. And so she gets up away from the bar. And apparently she had like Dwayne Reed bags, which is like pharmacy bags. She just had like two shopping bags that came out of nowhere. She like pulls them up. And she looks at me and she's like, you missed an opportunity of a lifetime. And she starts walking out, hitting people with her bags. Like, people are just trying to eat their food. Now, when I was looking at Martha, something in my brain just started thinking like, you know, maybe, listen, I'm not an older white woman, right? But like, there's something about her persistence. There was something about her like pushiness, something about like she wanted something and she just kept going and going and going that I was just like, is that going to be me? Like, what am I doing here? Like, what am I looking for? Like, am I pushing this? Like, I should have just dropped off this wallet. Maybe that was a sign. Maybe like that happened so that I can go. Cause like, I need to get out of here. I gave her the money and I needed to go, but why am I still here? And then suddenly Cynthia comes in and she's like, what did you do to Martha? And I was like, I don't know. But like, I'm so happy you got your money. I think I'm going to go. And she's like, wait. And she takes out her little like notepad where she takes her orders and she writes something and she hands it to me and it has her name and her phone number. It's happening. And she says, you know, maybe we can hang out sometime. And I was like, cool, cool. And so maybe... Like, what would you want to do? She's like, I'm in a band, like I said, so like you could come and watch me play. And I was like, oh, like, do you play in Bushwick? Because that's where I found your wallet. She's like, no, that's where my boyfriend lives. And so I made those sounds, but inside. And I hand the paper back to her. And she just was very confused. She's like, what? I was like, I can't. And I found myself like stuttering. Like, I really couldn't get into it. I had a weird moment where I thought like, oh, somebody with somebody else. This feels familiar. And is it the same that happened with my ex? Is this like a sign that I'm just not reading? And like, no, like maybe we'll just be friends, but it could lead to something. I just start panicking. Either way, the fact that I just didn't feel comfortable just was enough. Shouldn't that be enough? Right? But I didn't listen to she says, listen, like, relax, we'll just be friends. And also, like, you never know what happens. And I was just right away, like, in my mind, I was like, that is not a way to start a relationship. Like, that's just not cool. Like, if I was her boyfriend, I wouldn't be happy. Maybe they have an open situation. I didn't know at the time. And so I took the piece of paper and I stuffed it in my pocket and I headed out. And so it's like a day or two. And I'm doing the thing that I do. And I'm walking through Bushwick. And I needed something familiar like I always did at that time. And I'm just in the physical past again. I'm looking at like the park where like my ex and I would just like hang out and just talk and make each other laugh with stupid internet stuff. And I have this phone number in my hand. I still haven't texted Cynthia. And I have something new in my hand. And I'm surrounded by something old. Sounds like I'm getting married. And so... I wish I could tell you that I didn't text her, but I did. I did text her, and she didn't message me back, and I was really grateful for that. Yay for Cynthia. Yay for rejection. Here's the thing, and we're going to talk. Here's the thing. I couldn't control that part, right? So there's a lot of conversations about choices, and so I realized that I made a choice that I also was ashamed of. Like, I didn't feel good. Like, I was immediately be like, fuck. I thought I could stop. I had this whole moment, and I still pursued it. Like, even though she said we could just be friends, I didn't believe it. I still was doing the thing that I kept doing. I kept finding people where there was just like, don't do it. So I'm living in that shame, and I get to the corner, and I'm going to do the thing that I usually do, and I see the duplex. And I see my ex's duplex, and I remember... missing so many things in that moment.
And I thought I knew where my life was going to go when I proposed. And it went somewhere else. I remember closing my eyes and thinking, I want something new. I don't want to do this anymore. Now, it was the first time, I wish I could tell you it was the last time, that I didn't want to see that house anymore. And so I turned around, and I went around the block to avoid the duplex, and I got on the train, and I went to go walk somewhere else. Thank you.
Risk. This is Catrix behind me now. And we just heard from Christopher Moncayo Torres. He's based in Los Angeles, but you can find him on Instagram at Christopher from Queens. You know, when I moved to Thailand, I knew that being single would make the huge transition and adaptation harder. I know some folks here who moved here with their partners, and I think it's like night and day comparing our experiences. But what I hadn't anticipated quite so much is that the old attitude that I had in New York for a couple of decades, which was, I'll play with guys, I'll date guys, I'll have friends with benefits, but I won't be intentionally and actively focused on finding a primary partner. I won't be fixated on going out there to land that big fish, my main man. And a part of me really and truly came to peace by having that attitude, with the idea that I might never have a primary partner, you know, later in life and all. And that middle-aged New York attitude, because I didn't have that attitude when I was in my 20s in New York. I was obsessed in my 20s with finding someone. But in my middle age, I had adopted that sort of new attitude, and not being so fixated on that goal of finding someone, I found myself feeling free and easy and kind of accepting that sometimes I have mojo and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I end up delightfully surprised to find a friend with benefit sort of relationship deepening. And then sometimes I'm in great pain, but not destroyed by a relationship ending. So there was just, I don't know, something more liberated about not feeling so needy about that. But in my first year in Thailand, I have felt needy about finding a primary partner. And that has sucked. You know, it's because I'm a stranger in a strange land. People say, oh my God, you can't move here without finding yourself a Thai husband. That'll make it all work out so much easier for you. And so many of the ways that I'm so used to leaning into being unapologetically myself and marching to the beat of my own drummer and carving out my own lifestyle despite all the pressures to conform, a lot of those things were, for guys in New York, intriguing and curious and fun to get to know about me. While for guys here, a lot of guys here, I feel, especially Thai guys, those Kevin being who he wants to be things are bewildering and alienating. So somehow I've got to get back to my old New York attitude. and just be like, you know, fuck it. Not be desperate about this stuff, but really and truly be okay with the idea I might not find a partner. Or really anything ever other than, say, friends with benefits forever and ever. And to be okay with that again. Being in a relationship is hard. Being single is hard. And going from being in a relationship to being single is hard. And somehow we all just have to be okay, ultimately, with wherever we are on that spectrum. Okay, folks, there's various ways you can help keep risk running, and we really do need that help from our listeners. There is, of course, patreon.com/risk and plenty of perks for joining over there. And making a one-time donation is something you can do at risk-show.com/support. Risk. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Surrounded by alien foes. The fate of the galaxy depends on us.
We fancy a Mackey's? There are daily offers waiting in the McDonald's app.
But the universe...
The main mission can wait. Unlock daily offers in the McDonald's app now. 18 plus app only. Different offers available each weekday and on weekends until the 27th of September. Check app for details. Subject to availability. Fees apply to delivery. One use per day.
Legendary flavors from legendary Xbox games are now at McDonald's. Crispy golden garlic and black pepper McNuggets. Cheesy potato bites from Fallout 76 and Candy Crush McFlurry. The main mission can wait. Take a side mission to McDonald's.
Available until the 29th of September from 11 a.m. while stocks last, subject to availability. Participation varies.